Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 38, Akura's Arrival in Vrindavan. Text number 2. Gacchan pati. Gacchan pati mahabhago.
Gacchan pati mahabhago.
Bhagavat yambu jekshane.
Bhagavat yambu jekshane.
Bhaktim param upagata.
Bhaktim param upagata.
Iham vithara chintayat.
Iham vithara chintayat.
Gacchan pati mahabhago.
Gacchan pati mahabhago.
Bhagavat yambu jekshane. Bhaktim param upagata.
Bhaktim param upagata.
Iham vithara chintayat.
Iham vithara chintayat.
Gacchan pati mahabhago.
Gacchan pati mahabhago.
Bhagavat shambhu jekshane.
Bhagavat shambhu jekshane.
Bhaktim param upagata.
Bhaktim param upagata.
Iham vithara chintayat.
Iham vithara chintayat.
Gacchan pati mahabhago.
Gacchan pati mahabhago.
Gacchan,
traveling,
pati,
along the road,
mahabhaga,
the greatly fortunate,
bhagavati,
for the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
ambuja ikshane,
the lotus-eyed Lord,
bhaktim,
devotion,
param,
exceptional.
Upagattaha,
he experienced.
Evam,
thus.
Etat,
this as follows.
Achintayat,
he thought.
Translation.
As he traveled on the road, the great soul, Akura, felt tremendous devotion for the lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, and thus he began to consider as follows.
Kim maya charitam bhadram kim taptam paramam tapaha kim vyatap yarhate datam yadraksham yadha keshavam.
Sri Akura thought, what pious deeds have I done? What severe austerities undergone? What worship performed or charity given so that today I will see Lord Keshava?
So, there's a little background to the story, because this is just verse 2 and 3, so
verse 1 was Sukadeva Goswami said, after passing the night in the city of Mathura, the high-minded Akrura mounted his chariot and set off for the cowherd village of Nanda Maharaj. So, the previous day, Lord Krishna had called Akrura and asked him to go to Vrindavan and bring back Krishna. And he had organized that Akrura would arrive there sometime around dusk. At the same time, he'd also asked Keshi, the demon, who was actually very dear to Kamsa, to also go to Vrindavan and kill Krishna. So, just in case Akrura's mission failed, that was perhaps they could just have one last go at trying to kill him. So, anyway, on this particular morning, Akrura, of course, he spent that night, he's described as greatly intelligent. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the course, says that is because on that night, I think it was the Ekadasi night, he stayed up all night meditating, thinking, absorbed in thought of Krishna and discussing Krishna's glories. And in the morning, before even breaking fast, he just took off. So he's described as very, very intelligent because of his deep absorption and realization of the transcendental nature of Krishna consciousness and realization of pure devotional service. So on that morning, the Keshi demon, of course, arrived in Vrindavan and was killed by Krishna. Krishna having put his fist, his left hand, into the mouth of the Keshi demon. And as Prabhupada describes, if you want to control a horse, you control him through his mouth. You put a bit and what have you, you can control the horse. So Krishna understood that in order to control Keshi, you would do that through the mouth. This is the sensitive point. So he jammed his fist in there, and of course then his fist swelled up and he expanded. Keshi felt that his hand was expanding to the point where he felt like a ripe watermelon about to burst. And his eyes bulged and he passed through and his legs were kicking and he died. So then Krishna, of course, went back to playing with his cowherd boyfriends. And at that stage, Vyomasura, another demon who flies in the sky, he came and disguised himself and started taking away, disguised himself as a cowherd boy, and started taking away. The cowherd boys were playing their version of cops and robbers. So one would be a shepherd and one would be a lamb, and someone would come and take the sheep, and the shepherd would have to protect them and what have you. So Vyomasura came and he took them, and he took all these cowherd boys and he hid them in a cave, locked them up, put all boulders and rocks on, hid them. He was actually quite happy to suffocate them to death, factually. And therefore Krishna killed that demon. And it's described there that he killed him just as one kills a sacrificial animal. And that is the way that they often killed sacrificial animals, but they strangulated them, suffocated them like that sometimes. So in that way, because he intended to do that to the cowherd boys, Krishna reciprocated in kind and killed him in that particular way. So those demons were killed, And then later in that evening, Akura has just arrived in Vrindavan. He's on the road, as he travelled along the road. So as he's travelling along the road, he's feeling tremendous devotion for Krishna, addressed here as Lord Keshava. So Akura is described here as Mahabhago, or greatly fortunate, extremely fortunate. Sanatana Goswami also describes in his Sri Krishna Nirdastava that Akura was extremely fortunate. He was a pure devotee of the Lord. He was very, very dear to Lord Krishna. He was always absorbed in meditation on Krishna, Akura. And he was always longing to associate with Krishna. These are specific traits about the pure devotional mood and characteristics of Akura. And he attained perfection specifically for one particular reason. Who knows that?
Vandana,
yes, offering prayers. So there are 9 different processes of devotional service, and there are 9 personalities who attain perfection through just one of those particular processes. And there is Ambarish Maharaj, who attained perfection through executing all of those. So there is Shravanam, and the person who attained perfection by chanting was? Yeah, speaking. Sukadeva Goswami. The person who attained perfection by hearing? Cricket Maharaj. Remembering? Pallad Maharaj. Worshipping the lotus feet? Lakshmi. Hang on, I haven't said it yet. Hang on. Hold on. Archanam, deity worship. Priti Maharaj. Yeah. And then offering prayers. Good. Friendship. Arjun. What's that? Surrender. Bali Maharaj. So Akura, he is a Mahajan in specifically. If one wants to learn how to offer prayers to the Lord, one can follow the example of Akura, because there are many religions, and we see that Vandanam, offering prayers, is part of many different religions. But even other religious organizations can actually learn from Akura, because he is considered to be, at the topmost perfection of offering prayers. So generally, many people in various religions, they will offer prayers, Dear Lord, give us our daily bread, as one type of prayer. They pray to be, bless this house, bless my family. People will pray for so many material benedictions. People also pray for salvation, liberation from suffering conditions, liberation from the material world, or go to the heavenly planets. There are so many different levels of prayers, but the prayers of Akura are exemplary, because he is in his prayers, they're in the mood of pure devotional service, where one is not asking the Lord for anything other than the opportunity to serve Krishna. So Akura, of course, was in the relationship with Lord Sri Krishna as a servant. So he was always offering Krishna's service in that particular way. Although he was an elderly person, still his relationship was dasya, like a well-wisher service. There are different types of servants. You know, some can be servants in a subordinate position to Krishna, and some can be servants in a, you know, more superior position as well-wishers. So Akura was in that sort of situation. So so although he is greatly fortunate, he is saying here that, you know, what pious deeds have I done? And what severe austerities undergone? What worship performed or charity given so that today I will see Lord Keshava? So this is the very the humility of the Vaishnavas. It is the emblem of the Vaishnavas. It is a trait particularly prominent in Vaishnavas, more so even than other even other transcendentalists. So Lord Keshava, Akura is in his prayers is addressing Krishna as Lord Keshava, which is very significant in itself. Akura is in his humble state of humility, he is recognizing that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Lord of all demigods, of all planetary systems. So Keshava, one of the meanings of Keshava is Ka, it means Brahma, Isha, it means Lord Shiva, and Keshava. Keshava, from Vayate means to subdue or to control or to rule. So Keshava is the name of Lord Krishna who subdues all the demigods by his transcendental qualities, controls all the demigods. So by addressing Krishna as Keshava, he is recognizing his supreme position. And Keshava is also a name of Krishna because, of course, he killed the Keshi demon. So therefore, he is also known as Keshava. And in the very beginning of creation, there was apparently another demon, Keshava, who was also killed by the Lord. Although I'm not sure that was in the form of Krishna. But when we refer to Keshava, we're referring to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the origin and who incorporates all other various expansions of the Lord, is Lord Keshava. So sometimes there is so Keshava is the name of Krishna, and there is also Keshava who is one of the expansions of Krishna in the spiritual world. So there is Adi Keshava. Krishna is Adi Keshava, the original Keshava in the spiritual world. In Dwarka, Krishna expands as Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pajumna, Aniruddha. There is a second expansion of the Chaturvyuha, quadruple expansion, in the who are spread throughout the spiritual world. And that second expansion, each one of those four expands again into three. So the first expansion of Vasudeva is Keshava. And then each of those four expansions expand again into eight. So there are 24 particular expansions which spread in the eight directions of the spiritual sky, who are also worshipped in different places in the material world. So Keshava is a name of one of the expansions of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, when we put on tilak, Om Keshava Namah, like that, and there are 12 different months, also represented by these expansions from the second Chaturvyuha, and each of those months is given a name of those different expansions. So there is Keshava month. So, but Keshava is also a name for Krishna, as well as Krishna's expansion. And so Krishna killed many demons, either as Krishna or as his expansions. And Akrura, of course, he is being sent to Vrindavan on behalf of one particular demon, Kamsa. So he is, he is understanding that, he's meditating that, I am going to see the Supreme Lord. I have been deputed by Kamsa, a demon, who wants me to bring Krishna and kill him. But Krishna is Keshava. He is the killer of these demons. So he is meditating on Krishna's transcendental position. And sometimes in the Bhagavad Gita also, Arjuna would address Krishna as Keshava. Krishna is addressed as Keshava in the sense that he is a killer of many demons, and sometimes doubts are compared to demons. So sometimes when Arjuna would address Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita from the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he would address him as Keshava, hoping, in the sense that he is beckoning the Lord, that you please destroy these demons of doubts that are within my heart. So in a sense, Akura also has a slight doubt, because he's approaching Kamsa, approaching Krishna on behalf of Kamsa, and he is hoping that Krishna will recognize that he is only coming with a devotional attitude, simply with looking for an opportunity to render service to Krishna, to see Krishna, to serve Krishna, and he is hoping that Krishna will recognize that and not feel that he is somehow connected with Kamsa's plan. So this is some doubt, and he is sure that Krishna will destroy that particular doubt. So Krishna is also called Keshava. He subdues the pride of the demigods and the demons and also the gopis. In that pastime also Krishna was addressed as Keshava, because another meaning of Keshava is that one, Kishan Vayate, means one who cleans the hair, or specifically one who is very expert in dressing Srimati Radharani's hair, decorating like that. So in this way, Akrura, he is meditating on Lord Keshava. And in meditating on Lord Keshava, he is naturally in a very humble state of mind. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they're always meek and humble, enchanted by remembering the transcendental qualities of the Lord. So when one remembers the very transcendental qualities of the Lord, naturally one becomes very enchanted, and naturally one becomes very meek and humble. So in this way, Akrura was travelling on the road in this exceptional devotional mood, a very humble state of mind, even though he was greatly fortunate. He was on his way to meet Krishna, but he wasn't puffed up. As a great devotee, he knows that Lord Keshava, he doesn't like pride. When that pride manifests, even in big demigods, Krishna smashes it. Even when it manifests in his exalted devotees, Krishna, you know, removes pride. So, he is naturally thinking that, you know, what have I done? You know, it is not because I am some great personality. You know, I'm so devoted, I'm such a big devotee. You know, I'm so well situated, I'm such a fortunate person. That is why I'm on my way to Vrindavan to see Krishna. He's not thinking like that. He's thinking, search as I may, I cannot find any qualifications for this, you know, great fortune, this transcendental opportunity. So Lord Krishna is actually very attracted to the quality of humility. Not the in the Narada Bhakti Sutra, Narada Muni actually states that you know, when a devotee develops humility in their devotional service, then Krishna becomes very attracted towards that devotee. So Narada Muni is not talking about the type of humility that's, you know, ordinary humility where you have the you know, materialistic people, you know, that sometimes, you know, you go first, you know. Even though sometimes they're very great personalities, they may, you know, take a humble position, especially when they're in the public eye or something, people are watching. But it's not that sort of humility that to enhance my own reputation, to enhance my situation in the world, I will manifest humility, you know, and, you know, where it is necessary. But when it comes to the Supreme Lord, I will completely disregard him. There's not that sort of humility. Narada Muni is talking about the humility which is specifically in relationship to the Lord. That a devotee in a humble state of mind always thinks that I will do what Krishna wants me to do. It's that sort of humility. It's not a false show of always walking around, head bowed down. And it's not a false show of humility so that one will be known as, oh, he is so humble. But it's real humility that in relationship to the Lord, that I will do what Krishna wants me to do. That's the humility that attracts Krishna, and that's the humility that Narada Muni is talking about. And that, you know, I will do what Krishna wants me to do is surrender. And there are six different degrees of surrender. Or divisions, which are to accept everything favourable for the service of the Lord, to reject everything unfavourable for the service of the Lord, to be, you know, very, always dependent on Krishna alone, and to be very confident that Krishna will, you know, maintain, protect one's devotional service. To have no other desire except the desire of the Lord, and always to be meek and humble in the service of the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada, in commenting on this verse by Narada Muni, states that actually all of these six different divisions of surrender, all of them involve humility. And without humility, is very important for advancement in devotional service, because generally people think that they give themselves credit that, you know, I am very fortunate because I'm very knowledgeable. Because of my, you know, great prowess in knowledge, you know, I've attained this fortunate position. Or because of my beauty, or because of my strength, because of my, you know, particular expertise, you know, because of this, because of that, I am very fortunate. That's generally how people think. But in a devotee, he doesn't think like that. He thinks, if I have any qualifications, they have come by Krishna's mercy. If I have any qualifications at all, any good fortune, they have come by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. That is the mentality of a devotee. Whereas, you know, those, generally the more powerful, the more opulence, the more beauty, the more strength, the more proud and puffed up people become. And we see that sometimes, even in the demigods, because of their very, very exalted position, that they will in fact, you know, challenge Krishna. As we saw, you know, in the case of Lord Brahma, who, you know, stole Krishna's friends. Indra, you know, sent clouds and, you know, trying to kill all the residents of Vrindavan, drown them, like this. So Krishna actually, he subdued, when there is pride, one of the characteristics of Krishna is that he will remove it. So in all other, even in other different transcendental processes, there is humility, but it's not on the same level as the humility that is cultivated in Bhakti Yoga. Because generally in other processes, if you follow the process of Karma Yoga or Jnana Yoga, it tends to, it doesn't diminish your pride, but it can foster pride. Because as a Karma Yogi, you know, as they're performing their various activities and you know, gaining wealth, gaining a very fortunate material position, then they become proud of that fortunate material position. See? Because they're thinking, I have so expertly engaged in this, you know, rituals, Karma Kanda rituals, everything was nicely done, and I have, you know, done this and done that, and, you know, very expertly, and therefore I have achieved, you know, these material rewards as a result. So it tends to foster their pride. The same with the Jnanis, that, you know, I have studied the Shastra and developed this great vast knowledge of, you know, the difference between matter and spirit, and because of my vast knowledge and my great prowess and austerities, I have attained this liberated position, and even they claim to be Narayan. Mm. They become very proud that, you know, I am God. I become one with God. And the yogis also make the same mistake, that, you know, by my expertise in yogic processes, yoga cities, yoga, you know, practices, I have achieved these yoga perfections, become great, great yogi. Sometimes they even identify themselves as Yogeshwara, or, you know, the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul, but still they become puffed up with their very, very powerful mystic cities, and they sometimes abuse those mystic cities, feel that they are untouchable. Now I can, you know, do whatever I like because I am so powerful. Who can touch me? Like this. So in other processes, although humility is part of it and cultivated, it is not the same as in devotional service. Because in devotional service, see, although you can achieve those various levels of perfection with just some lip service paid to humility, but in devotional service you can't advance one step without cultivating humility. If you don't cultivate humility, your devotional service stops. Where your humility stops, your devotional service stops. See? So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, therefore, you know, he considered it to be essential. That one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself to be lulled in the straw on the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So, the nature of the devotee is that they take this by taking this, you know, humble position, an essential ingredient for advancement in Krishna consciousness, then they steadily progress. Srila Prabhupada says, you cannot be a devotee, you cannot not be humble and at the same time be a devotee. And the more you progress, the more you advance in Krishna consciousness, the more you advance in spiritual advancement, the more humble you become. This is a sort of Prabhupada commenting on this particular verse. So, therefore, you see that the Mahabhagavat devotees, the first class, topmost devotees, their humility, real humility, that they heartfelt humility, not just an imitation, but their feeling that everyone is nicely engaged in service. Except me. You see here in Krura. You know, so they're like the next verse is Mamaita Dhanamanya Kama Sloka Dadashanam Vishiyat Mano Yita Brahma Kirtanam Sudra Janmanam. So since I am a materialistic person absorbed simply in sense gratification, I think it is difficult for me to have gotten this opportunity to see Lord Uttama Sloka, as it would be for one born a sudra to be allowed to recite the Vedic mantras. So he is considering, I am a materialistic person absorbed in sense gratification. Mm. So that the, you know, the Mahabhagat, the symptom of Mahabhagat, and that is a symptom. I am just, you know, I have a tinge of devotion for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also. He said, I do not have even a drop of love for Krishna. So when you see me crying when I'm chanting the holy name of the Lord, I'm just exhibiting my good fortune. See? It's like, that's what people do. People, when they're proud, they like to exhibit their good fortune, that, you know, because of my great qualification, I have achieved this very greatly qualified position. So I'm crying just to show you, you know, the highly qualified position that I've achieved through my own great prowess. Is that I'm going to get my fortunate position. But actually, you know, any love for Krishna, I would have left my body, you know, long, long ago. I am living just like an insect, without any purpose, because I have not even a drop of love. So that's how the devotees feel. So so Krishna becomes very attracted to the devotees, and he becomes very attracted to their quality of humility. Now one may say that you know, that would make Krishna partial. That, you know, he's favouring this one, you know, and not being responsive to the person. But actually, Prahlad Maharaj in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam gives one verse which very nicely explains this point, that, you know, it is not Krishna who is being unresponsive, but it is actually we who are unresponsive. Because of our pride, we don't reciprocate with the Supreme Lord. We are, you know, proudly thinking we are independent and don't really need to pay much attention to God. You know, maybe he's there, maybe he's not, but I'm so well situated, it doesn't bother me whether he even exists, because I'm just completely independent. That's pride. Because of our pride, we, even though the Lord is constantly reciprocating with us, pride makes us unqualified to serve Him. But the Lord is unreciprocal. It is actually pride unqualified to reciprocate with the Lord. But actually the Lord is like a desire tree, in the sense that if someone approaches a desire tree fulfills their desires according to their desires. The desire tree doesn't consider who is higher or lower. So, you know, just like when people go to the Holy Dharma, Vrindavan, we always say, be careful what you desire there. It's full of desire trees. Sometimes you see devotees go there and they come back, they get diverted into some other thing. You can see that some desire is being fulfilled as a result of their going to the Holy Dharma to be careful. So, but the desires don't discriminate who is higher or lower. They award the desires according to, you know, what they're desiring. And Krishna also, he is reciprocating with the devotee according to their level of degree of devotional service, which is represented by their humility, their humble devotional service. Like that. So humility is a barometer for a devotee of how they're going to be able to reciprocate with the Lord, and also how the Lord, because of their humility, will bestow on them. So, in this mood, Akura is speaking, praying to the Lord as he's traversing along to Vrindavan. So, the question may be asked that I mean, he's saying, what pious deeds have I done? What severe austerities undergone? What worship performed in charity that I will see Lord Keshava? So, within this statement, there's also the understanding that generally one doesn't get some uncommon good fortune unless, you know, previously, either in this life or in a previous life, someone has performed some high activity. So, it's a devotional service. Pious activities have three different categories. Here, Akura, he's on his way to Vrindavan to see Krishna. And he knows that this is a very exalted, rare, transcendental opportunity that has come his way. And he's thinking that, I'm very unqualified. I cannot understand, but what did I do? But within that statement, the understanding is that there must be something somewhere. I'm not qualified to do anything, perhaps by the Lord's mercy. Perhaps by the mercy of the Lord or by the mercy of the devotees, somewhere previously, they have made it. That is Agyata Sukriti. just like when Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan with his disciples, and they spent some time there, and then when he was leaving, he said to them in his leaving address, he said, by some good fortune you have got the opportunity to associate with Vrindavan Dham. He said, by some good fortune due to pious activities in your previous lives, is what he said, you have got this opportunity to associate with Vrindavan Dham. See? So it was at some point that it doesn't, nothing has chance anywhere within the creation of the Lord. By some good fortune, pious activities in previous life, you have got the opportunity to associate with Vrindavan Dham. And then he says, but now you have to realize the atmosphere of Vrindavan. So Agyata Sukriti has that benefit that by some unknown or unwillingly performed without, you know, you're not trying to perform a devotional service, but somehow or another you've come in contact with the Lord, His devotees, and they've engaged you in devotional service. You don't even know that you're doing it. You're just doing something else in your mind. But you're getting transcendental higher status. And the result of that, it will bring you into the association of the Lord. It will bring you into the association of the Lord's Dharma, or it will bring you into the association of the Lord. And then, but that's not where it finishes. At that point, one has to take advantage of that. And to do that, one has to take shelter of the instructions of the Mahatma, or the pure devotees of the Lord. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada said, if you want to realize the spiritual atmosphere of Vrindavan, then you have to make sure, then you have to follow in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami and other Goswami, Sikha Goswami, and do not let any influence of the age of Kali into this holy Dharma. No illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, no meeting. Do not allow any of these things. And always be in the frame of mind that I am the eternal servant of Krishna. Not some, you know, false pride, some false identity that, you know, I am a Brahmana, I am a sannyasi, you know, I am this, I am that. You know, I am the servant of Krishna. That is the Vrindavan mood. Vrindavan, they're all absorbed in, you know, service to Krishna. They're not absorbed in the external, identification as the all in all. Their all in all is somehow or another serving Krishna. So by following the steps and following the instructions of the acharyas, the master, the mahatmas, then one takes advantage of that great fortune. So this is some... Srila Uddhava describes this in this next verse. He says, Vaivam madhamasyapi sad eva chutta darshanam hriyamana kalanadja kvachittarati kaschana. But enough of such thoughts. So as we know, he's been, and I am a materialist, I have no qualification to go, what piety have I ever done? I'll turn back and I'll go back to Mathura. No. Well, even a fallen soul like me can have the chance to behold the infallible Supreme Lord, for one of the conditioned souls being swept along in the river of time may sometimes reach the shore. Very nice verse. This verse is quoted sometimes, Chaitanya Charitamrita, in different places, Nectar Devotion. I read it again. But enough of such thoughts. After all, even a fallen soul like me can have the chance to behold the infallible Supreme Lord. For one of the conditioned souls being swept along in the river of time may sometimes reach the shore. So here, Akura, he is saying, you know, we as conditioned souls, we're this ocean of the material energy just being swept away in this ocean of time. It's just, you know, one body after another, another body, another body, another body, millions of bodies, and then after that, millions and more bodies. And after that, millions and millions of more bodies. And after that, and it just is the ocean of time. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, we have this body. There could be millions more. You know, people. Sometimes people have this sense that, you know, one or two lifetimes I'll end up in heaven, or you know, whatever. But you know, there could be millions and millions of lifetimes. But, you know, people just sweat on this ocean. It's, you know, like an ocean or a river. Sometimes, just like there are logs. And they somehow, by good fortune, they reach the shore. It's not that no logs ever reach the shore. Right? So Akura is saying that yes, I'm a conditioned soul in this, you know, river of time, this ocean of time, but But some conditioned souls, they, by great fortune, they do reach the shore. They do reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, you know, summoning his confidence and remembering Lord Keshava, you know, the destroyer of all doubts. We may have some doubts in devotional service, but if we remember Lord Keshava, he will eradicate that doubt and give you confidence to progress on the path of devotional service. Akura meditating very firmly on Lord Keshava, and Lord Keshava within his heart encouraging him, and therefore growing in confidence that yes, I am unqualified, but somehow or another this opportunity is presenting itself, and I may just, you know, reach the Supreme Lord and behold his beautiful face and his beautiful lotus feet like that, and surrender to him and render service to him. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this reaching the shore is likened to, and Srila Prabhupada also in purports describing this particular verse, reaching the shore means reaching the association of the, because when by some previous good fortune, a Gyara Sakriti, someone comes in contact with the Mahatmas, the Vaishnavas, then that is the beginning. It, by associating with those Vaishnavas, that is, the doors of liberation from the material world open up, and by associating with those Vaishnavas, they develop attraction for Krishna, lose their attraction with the material world, and ultimately go back to Godhead. So this is reaching the shore. But of course, reaching the shore is not enough. We have to actually get up on the embankment. You know, and sometimes the embankment is very, very slippery. Because, you know, it's the in-between bit. I remember one time I was in Mayapur, and we were somewhere around 82 or 1980. And we went on Parikram, and we were we had the Lord Gaunatai, the deities of Gaunatai and the palanquin. And we carried them all through, and then we would get onto a boat, cross, you know, on the sacred rivers, go to a village, chant Hare Krishna, distribute prasad, eat prasad, sing and dance, and then cross the river and, you know, go somewhere else and do the same like this. But some of the river banks were very steep. It was like, you know, walking from here to the top of the pillar, and that clay, slippery wet clay, and we had to walk with the palanquins, you know, on our shoulders. Those mountains were left, right and centre, you know, covered in mud. The river, so many devotees went down, you know, and somehow or another, you know, we had the Lord, we took shelter of the Lord. You know, we appeared to be holding him, but I'm sure he was holding us, because none of us fell over. So we have to, you know, you reach the embankment, very, you know, but we have to get firmly onto the shore. Now, to do that, one has to take advantage of the instructions of the Mahatmas, of the devotees. And if a devotee does that, then by associating with the devotees, following their instructions, then that little spark of that bottom association becomes very firm and fixed up faith, and that faith gradually, you know, that firm faith allows one to execute devotional service very strictly. Firm faith. When a devotee is executing devotional service with firm faith, they develop the four qualities of humility as described in that verse. They actually properly develop at that stage. That's when you see devotees are very tolerant, when they're fixed up. Tolerance in devotional service is a sign of a fixed up devotee. You don't see it in one who's not fixed up. They're prideless. You know, they've kicked off most of the faults, and, you know, they're done with trying to attain distinction as a great Vaishnava, or, you know, what to speak of a great person in this world. They're fixed up, I want to serve Krishna, that's all, not myself, not my ego. So they're prideless, But they're very happy to offer all respects to others, all living entities, what to speak to the devotees. And, you know, they're always, so tolerant, prideless, respectful. What was the other one?
Humble.
Yeah, considering oneself, you know, in one's proper time with the spirit soul. So these qualities actually properly manifest, they begin to properly develop at that stage when the devotee becomes fixed up. And then when a devotee becomes fixed up, then the anathas, all by and large, 60-70% of the anathas, the modes of passion and ignorance, they, you know, are removed by that firm, you know, always engaged in devotional service, serving Krishna, not serving the mode of passion, not serving the mode of ignorance. There's something there in the heart, but by and large it's gone. And then from that, they get a taste from devotional activities, ruchi. It's very hard to get a taste for devotional activities if you're not serving. If you're not serving Krishna and you're still absorbed in serving Maya, that's where your taste is coming. To get the taste, you actually have to do, you know, be always serving. When you're always serving, say, oh, this is, you know, I'm getting a taste. From that taste, one becomes very attached to Krishna consciousness. That very deep attachment, detached to the world, the dawnings of pure love of God, you know, begin to manifest in very ecstatic, if we don't take advantage of that, then, you know, we have wasted a golden opportunity. You know, good fortune, when something very fortunate happens, as Srila Prabhupada says, I think quoting Chanaka Pandit, you know, what's that saying? That, you know, when there's an opportunity, you know, you should seize it immediately. If something is auspicious, you should do it immediately. That's the idea. So, you know, if the nature of this world, especially Kali Yuga, that if something is very auspicious and we allow it to slip by, it can just completely disappear in, you know, amongst the chaos of Kali Yuga. But somehow by good fortune we have this opportunity to take full advantage and become Krishna conscious. So I'll leave it there if anyone has any comments or questions.
One point what you said, that's why they say Shubhasya Shibhyam. In Sanskrit they say Shubhasya Shibhyam. Anything auspicious you must do immediately.
Yes, that's
no postponement.
No.
Shubhasya Shibhyam.
Yeah, he who hesitates is lost.
Yeah. Second point, my comment is that Ravana, you know Ravana?
Mm-hmm.
He was so proud. He was advised by his son, by his brother, yes, and his brother, he kicked him when his brother Vibhishan told him to surrender to Lord Rama.
Mm-hmm.
He was kicked, and then at that point he went to Lord Rama and joined the group.
Mm-hmm.
So what you are saying, humility is the most important barometer.
Mm-hmm.
Without humility you cannot do anything in
life. Mm-hmm. That's a fact.
My question to you is, what was Akrura in previous life? Is something given?
I'm not sure of the previous life, but I know that in the next life he appeared as Gopinath Simha in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was one of the devotees that used to go to Jagannath Puri with Advaita Acharya and join in on all the Lord's wonderful pastimes in Jagannath Puri. The previous life I'm not sure. Any other questions or comments? Jai, I'm going to shoot up.